So I've put a question for you on the screen there. What would you say about your sons? How would you have felt back in 1981 if your English teacher, Mr. Jones, had written the following about you in your school report? Do you remember those little things that you had to take home to your parents? Imagine that Mr. Jones had written this about you. Stephen could do much better in this subject if he focused his limited intelligence on the ancient English literature that we have been studying this term, rather than gawping out of the window, studying the girls playing netball outside. How would you have felt if someone had written so harshly about you? You may remember that back in the day, teachers did not mince their words. And I think things have changed a bit now. I don't think you get away with writing that kind of a school report today. And by the way, it wasn't mine, so don't imagine it was. But here's the thing, imagine that it wasn't the teachers that had to write the report. Imagine it was the parents that had to write the report for their own children. What would parents write? I mean, would parents even be honest? Would they be objective? Would they be biased? Imagine for a moment that you have 12 sons and you need to write or say something about each one of them. What would you say? And now, imagine that your sons are not 12 little kids, but 12 grown-up sons. Some of them are in their 50s and 60s. And imagine that what you say will be written down, not in the local newspaper, but in the Holy Scriptures that will be handed down from generation to generation. And imagine that just before you die, you want to say something about them. Yes, you want to bless them, but you want your blessing to be appropriate to each one. You are going to need to be quite honest. Well, in Genesis chapter 49, that is exactly what happens. Jacob, also known as Israel, calls his 12 sons in for a little chat. And I wonder, do you think that the sons may have varied in their enthusiasm about this little chat? Maybe some of them thought, yes, it will be great to get Dad's perspective on things. Whilst others may have thought, what's he going to say this time? Or, I don't need another sermon. We don't know all of their ages at this point, but I have done a rough calculation and I reckon that Joseph is about 56 years old at this time. And remember, he was the 11th of his brothers, so his older brother Reuben could have been about 10 years older than him, making him possibly around about 66 years old. And of course, these 12 sons of Jacob had families and responsibilities of their own. So I guess it was quite a thing to get them all together in one place. Maybe it had to be planned a few days in advance to make sure that everyone would be present. And then at the appointed time, Jacob says, come on, turn off the TV, put your phones on silent. In fact, put them out of sight. I want you to listen to me. Well, let's have a look at the actual text, what was actually said. Genesis 49, verse 1. Then Jacob called for his sons and he said, gather round so that I can tell you what will happen to you in days to come. Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob. Listen to your father Israel. Now, before we go any further, we have got to remember that Jacob, also known as Israel, is not just their father. Israel is a man, and he is also a nation. And likewise, his 12 sons are not just his offspring. They are his sons, but they are also chiefs of the tribes of Israel. And as Israel speaks, he makes reference to the past, but he also speaks prophetically at times about the future. Some of the things that he says about the past may well have been human recollection, but the things he says about the future can only have been revealed by the living God. Now, as you know, Jacob had 12 sons, so you would expect that there would be 12 sections for us to look at. Well, yes, except that Simeon and Levi have been lumped together, which means we only have 11 sections to look at. And as we read each section, I would like to ask you to be involved. Is that okay? I'd like to ask you to review what is written and award a rating to each one. Now, you know how ratings work online, yeah? So if you review a product online, you give a rating of 1 to 5. You have the little stars, yeah? But in this situation, to make things simpler, I suggest that we just have 3 ratings. The question to bear in mind is, when Jacob speaks about each son, is he declaring good news, bad news, or is it kind of neutral? Or to put it another way, when he talks about a specific son, is that something you would like to have been said about you? You'll get the gist as we go along. So I'm going to suggest we have just 3 ratings: minus, neutral, or plus. I'm not going to ask you if it makes sense, because you'll say no. But we'll go on anyway. Let's start with Reuben. And here I've got his name, the reference in the Bible, and there's just the 3 options: minus, neutral, or plus. Let's read the passage. So this is Genesis 49, verse 1. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power. Turbulent as the waters, you will no longer excel, for you went up onto your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. So, what rating would you give to these words about Reuben? A minus, a neutral, or a plus? Someone saying a neutral? Someone shaking his head? We've got thumbs down, minuses. Remember, we're not talking about everything that Reuben ever did or everything that's written about him in the scripture. We're talking about these words spoken by Jacob, okay? Well, look, verse 3 is all good, isn't it? Verse 3 is wonderful. But everything changes in verse 4 when Reuben is told, turbulent as the waters, you will no longer excel, for you went up onto your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. Now, this incident is recorded in Genesis 35. And I'll just read a very brief bit. Israel moved on again and pitched his tent beyond Migdal Eder. While Israel was living in that region, Reuben went in and slept with his father's concubine, Bilhah, and Israel heard of it. Based on what has been said by Jacob, my rating is going to be us. Okay. There's no points to be gained here, don't worry. Let's move on to the next one. Simeon and Levi, who are addressed together, starting in verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brothers, their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter their council. Let me not join their assembly, for they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger. So fierce and their fury so cruel, I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. So what rating would you give to these words about Simeon and Levi? We're getting lots of minuses, yeah? Okay. I would say that their father is not saying anything good about them. In Genesis 34, we read some time ago when we were in that chapter that their sister Dinah was raped by Shechem the Hivite. And by way of revenge, her brothers acted deceitfully when Shechem actually tried to put things right. They told all the men of the city that they would need to be circumcised. And then, and I quote, 3 days later, while all of the men were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. They put Hamor and his son Shechem to the sword, and they took Dinah from Shechem's house and left. The sons of Jacob came upon the dead bodies and looted the city where their sister had been defiled. They seized their flocks and herds and donkeys and everything else of theirs in the city and out in the fields. They carried off all their wealth and all their women and children, taking as plunder everything in the houses. And after all of this, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi back in the day, "You have brought trouble on me by making me obnoxious to the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the people living in this land. We are few in number, and if they join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed. But Simeon and Levi responded, should he have treated our sister like a prostitute?" Now, it was normal for Simeon and Levi to be upset and angry by what Shechem had done to their sister Dinah. But I think you could say that they lost all control. And as Jacob says here in Genesis chapter 49, they had killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. So my rating for Simeon and Levi is going to be a minus. Did I go the wrong way? Is that okay? I hope we're okay. Okay, so my rating for them is going to be a minus. However, there is something prophetic in what Jacob says about Levi. Because if you remember, the Levites became the worship leaders in Israel, responsible for the temple worship. And as such, as we mentioned last week, they did not receive a tribal inheritance of land, but received a number of towns throughout Israel, and hence they were scattered and dispersed throughout Israel. Furthermore, in Exodus 32, it was the Levites who rallied to Moses at the time of the golden calf. They did become the leaders of the temple worship. But of course, by the time of Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan, they had the reputation as those who walked by on the other side of the road when people were in need. But the wording that we have just read in verse 7, when Jacob says, I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel, does seem to be prophetic and relate to that special role that the Levites will have in the temple worship. But what about Simeon, who has been lumped together with Levi? In what way will the Simeonites be scattered and dispersed? Well, in their case, it seems that they were dispersed as they fell into sin and subsequently lost power and decreased number. Let's move on now to Judah. We're in verse 8 now. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's son will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, Judah. You return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse him? The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come, and the obedience of the nations shall be his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. So, what rating would you give to Judah based on these words? On these words. What are you doing? We got some thumbs up, yeah? When you close your eyes and do that, does that mean good? That's a plus, is it? Okay. Quite a lot of pluses, yeah? Judah is actually a very interesting character because remember, he was the one who said back in Genesis 37, when Joseph had been thrown into the well by his brothers, he was the one who said, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come on, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. But selling your brother into slavery was hardly an act of kindness. It would have been better to rescue him completely. And don't forget that Reuben had already got it in mind to rescue Joseph. So if the two of them had worked together, maybe they really could have set Joseph free and not sold him into slavery. But then, of course, you're going to say to me, but it was God's plan for Joseph to go to Egypt. I saw you were just about to complain, yeah? And, of course, God can turn situations around. God can turn even the most desperate of situations around. Do you believe that this morning, my friends? Can I hear some response? Do you believe that God... yeah, God can turn situations around. And in Judah's defense, of course, it was Judah who asked to be taken slave in place of Benjamin when Joseph's cup had been found in Benjamin's sack. Now, it would probably complicate matters if we throw in the discussion about the time when Judah slept with Tamar, his daughter-in-law, thinking that she was a prostitute, so we might leave that one out for this morning. But suffice it to say, there were lots of ups and downs in Judah's life. Let's remember, the rating that we are giving this morning is based not on what these sons did during their lives, but by what Jacob says about them just before he dies. And my rating on the screen is a plus. Particularly because surely there is a prophetic reference to Jesus in what Jacob says. Look at verse 10, please, with me. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come, and the obedience of the nations shall be his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. Surely this refers to Jesus. In the New Testament book of Hebrews, we read, "It is clear that our Lord descended from Judah." And here, in our passage today from Genesis, we are being told the scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he to whom it belongs shall come. Surely this is a reference to Jesus, and even the reference to a donkey and a colt, to a vine, to wine and to blood, make us think, yes, this must relate to Jesus. But doesn't that raise the question, how did Jacob know to say all these things? Surely he was speaking prophetically by the power of God and by faith. And in Hebrews chapter 11, we are told, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. It's by faith that Jacob is doing all of this. Yes, when Jacob made reference to Jesus whilst talking about Judah, he was indeed speaking prophetically by the power of God and by faith. Let's move on to Zebulun. Zebulun will live by the seashore and become a haven for ships. His border will extend towards Sidon. So what rating are you going to give to this one? Some are saying plus, some are saying neutral. Well, we are not told anything bad, but we're not talking about anything amazing, or we're not told anything amazing either. So my rating, if I can make it work, is going to be a neutral. Okay, what about Issachar? Let's move on to Issachar. Issachar is a scrawny donkey lying down among the sheepfolds. When he sees how good is his resting place and how pleasant is his land, he will bend his shoulder to the burden and submit to forced labor. What rating are you going to give to this one? A minus? A minus? Any other options? Okay. To think about this one, I felt that I needed to get a definition of the word scrawny. It's a word you hear occasionally, but I'd never defined it. So here it is. Very thin, because not fed enough, such that the shape of the bones can be seen under the skin. Or another definition, exceptionally thin and slight or meager in body or size. So my rating, let's have a look, is going to be a minus there. There seems to be in this a reference, in Issachar, there seems to be a reference to complacency. Did you get that? Resting in pleasant places, but that complacency seems to lead to slavery and forced labor. Perhaps a warning for all of us, the dangers of complacency. Let's move on now to Dan. Dan will provide justice for his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan will be a snake by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider tumbles backwards. I look for your deliverance, Lord. What rating would you give to these words about Dan? I've had some thumbs down. Yeah. You're Dean Emmanuel saying positive. You know what? I wasn't sure about this one, because on the one hand, I loved the reference to Dan providing justice to his people, but I wasn't sure about the reference to Dan being a snake. And in verse 18, when it says, I look for your deliverance, Lord, I wasn't quite sure who was speaking at that point. So with that in mind, my rating for Dan is neutral. Sometimes as a pastor, you do have to be sort of, you know, you've got people saying plus, 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 some people saying minus, minus, minus. Sometimes you're in the middle. Let's have a look at Gad. Why is this not working? Gad. Likewise with Gad, I'll tell you straight up, my rating for Gad is going to be neutral. If I can make it work, yeah. Gad will be attacked by a band of raiders, but he will attack them at their heels. I just felt this has got to be a neutral, because Gad will be attacked and Gad will attack. I didn't feel like I could rate him positive or minus, so I went for neutral on that one. Let's have a look now at Asher. Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. What rating would you give to these words about Asher? Positive? Neutral? Yeah? You're going to do a minus? I mean, I might be biased on this one, being that I am a person who likes my food. Being that I like my food, I think they call them in Romanian a gourmand. I like my food. So on a casual reading, my rating for this is going to have to be plus. Naphtali. Let's talk about Naphtali. Naphtali is a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns. How are you going to rate this one? Positive? Yeah? I think I might agree with you. Let's have a look. Yeah, Naphtali put positive. I mean, there wasn't really much to say about that, really. Yeah? Now we move to Joseph. Now let's just talk for a brief moment about Joseph. Let's just remember that we get to Jacob's first son born of his beloved wife, Rachel. Just to clarify, not his firstborn son, but the first son born to Rachel, his beloved wife. And Jacob starts with some beautiful words in verse 22. He says, Joseph is a fruitful vine near a spring, whose branches climb over a wall. I would say, yes, there are some beautiful words. Joseph is likened to a fruitful vine and to a vine near a spring. And it goes without saying, really, that my rating for Joseph is going to be a plus. And I don't think anyone's going to disagree, right? I don't think so. Joseph is likened to a fruitful vine and to a vine near a spring. And then Jacob makes reference to the ordeal that he suffered at the hands of his brothers and the years of slavery and the years in prison in Egypt. Verse 23, he talks metaphorically about archers attacking him. But the thing that is most evident of all is that God was with Joseph. Let's have a read for these verses. So verse 23, with bitterness, archers attacked Joseph. They shot at him with hostility, but his bow remained steady. His strong arms stayed supple because of the hand of the mighty one of Jacob, because of the shepherd, the rock of Israel, because of your father's God who helps you. because of the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of the skies above, blessings of the deep, springs below, blessings of the breast and the womb. And Jacob goes on to conclude, your father's blessings are greater than the blessings of the ancient mountains, greater than the bounty of the age-old hills. Let all of these rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince among his brothers. I think we will all agree that Jacob blesses Joseph abundantly and makes him the prince among his brothers. Now, we need to move on to Benjamin. So last of all, we have Benjamin, also born to Jacob's beloved wife, Rachel. Also beloved of his father, so much so that Jacob had not wanted to allow Benjamin to travel with his brothers to Egypt. What will Jacob say about Benjamin? Will he say something similar to what he said about Joseph? I'm very sorry, but Jacob does not say very much about Benjamin at all. Just verse 27. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours the prey. In the evening he divides the plunder. And that is all we are told about Benjamin. So, I'm sorry, my rating on the screen is going to have to be neutral for Benjamin. And as the account of the blessings draws to a close, we read, by way of summary, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, giving each the blessing appropriate to him. The key word here seems to be that Jacob blessed them, giving each the blessing appropriate to him. The right and appropriate blessing based on what his sons had done in the past and what God is going to do with them and through them in the future. Now, our system of rating these 12 sons this morning was not very scientific and was based mostly on what Jacob said rather than other factors and scripture references which we could have looked at if you'd been prepared to stay here a lot longer. But I would say it's clear, even from a casual reading of this passage, that not all of the sons were treated the same. And bearing in mind that these 12 sons were leaders of their families and leaders of their tribes, does it not stand to reason that in the future, some of the tribes would become a better context, a better place in which to be born than others? You can imagine someone saying in the future, I wish I had been born into a different tribe. And you can't help thinking about that verse in the Bible that talks about children being punished for the sin of their fathers. Where is that verse? We read it this morning, yeah? What have I done? Can you get it back for me, hopefully? Thank you, Rosie. Yeah, in Exodus chapter 20, that Gabby and Karen read earlier for us. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, I am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me, keep my commandments. Yes, throughout history and in our generation today, the making of idols is a great sin and a great wickedness. And God says, do not make them. God says, do not bow down to them. And by way of application, I wonder, can some of you just shout out, what are some of the idols that we may be making today? What are some of the idols that we may be bowing down to today? Money. Okay, thank you, Fiona. Social media. Absolutely. Family members. Sorry, I didn't catch that one. Jobs. Jobs, careers, yeah. Things that we make into idols that we bow down to. Alcohol. Did someone say celebrities? Yeah. Drugs. Pleasure. And bowing the knee to the political agenda. Self. Yeah, thank you. Bowing the knee to what society tells us we ought to believe that we ought to do. Say that again. Statues. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And what happens when we make idols? We get punished. And who else gets punished? Our children to the third, the fourth generation. So does that mean that the situation is hopeless? What if your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents have been serving idols? Is there any hope for you? Oh yes, there is. By the grace and the mercy of God, there is. Because you can choose to reject their idols. You can choose to turn to the living God. You can choose to not love their idols. You can choose to love your God. And what will be the reward? God will show love to you. Yes. Let me say it again. He will show love to you. And to who else? To who else? To 1,000 generations of your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. If they too choose to love the Lord and keep his commands. Why have I added this in? Because as we read Genesis 49, with the blessings that were given to all of the sons, all of the tribes. We must not read those words with a fatalistic mindset. We must not take the attitude that everything has already been decided in advance, such that we cannot make choices as we move forward. We do not have to be defined by the sins of our ancestors. We do not have to be defined by their mistakes, by their addictions, or by their attitudes. My brothers, my sisters, each of us and any of us can choose to be the first of a new generation. Do you love that idea? That's why I put it up on the screen. Each of us and any of us can choose to be the first of a new generation. Yes, any of us can reject the idols that were all around us as we grew up. And that's the thing. When we were growing up, the idols were all around us, and we got sucked into them. But we, any of us, can reject the idols that were around us as we were growing up. We can turn to the Lord, and we can love the Lord. Our God is the one who says, "Do not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. Do not bow down to them or worship them, because I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. I want your affection," says God. "I don't want you to be loving all these other things, all this other stuff. I want you to love me." And for that reason, our God says, "I am the God who punishes the children for the sin of the parents to the third and the fourth generation, those who hate." But the bit I've highlighted at the bottom of my notes, God says, "But I'm also the God who shows love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments." All of us and any of us can become the first of a new generation by the grace of God. Amen.